Good afternoon and welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to Kildare's KFM. It's Monday, the 16th of October. Caoimhe Harney here with you until 3. Coming up first on today's show, we'll speak to Dermot Carey, Director of Safety and Training at the Construction Industry Federation, because this month is Construction Safety Month. At 2.25, Joanna Fortune, child psychotherapist, will be telling us how to deal with children that are nervous or afraid of the likes of fireworks around Halloween. And then lastly, we'll speak to Bridget Sinnott, resuscitation manager at the Irish Heart Foundation. Restart a Heart Day is today, the 16th of October. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can call in on 045 898 999. You can email me to studio@kfmradio.com, or you can send us in a WhatsApp or text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, a shocking 2 out of 3 construction deaths this year have been the result of workers falling from heights. Construction Safety Month will focus on critical risks, including working at a height, lifting and unloading. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Dermot Carey. He's Director of Safety and Training at the Construction Industry.
Good afternoon to your listeners.
It's very critical for anyone, I suppose, working in construction to take the necessary precautions, but even more crucial is for the employers to have those policies in place.
That's fair to say. As in all workplaces, there's an obligation on the employer to ensure the safety of their workers and anybody who comes into contact with the operations that they're carrying on. And obviously that applies to construction as well. So what we're doing this month is just a reboot and a refocus on health and safety issues, and I'm emphasising the health bit there as well. It's important that we focus on that too, which we haven't done in years gone by, but we are getting better at looking at health issues. So you're right, it's very important that employers understand their obligations, and that's part of what we're doing. It's a focus on critical risks, as you rightly said in your introduction there. And what we mean by critical risks are things that people do on a regular basis that, unless they control them, could result in serious injury or fatality.
Okay.
So but the ask, I suppose, for this month is to just revisit those key things that people are involved in, and put a refocus, both employers and workers, on those issues that could cause serious injury.
So if you look then, and I already said this, about the 2 out of 3 construction deaths this year being as a result of workers falling from heights, is that higher than 2022? Has there been a change in the trend since the pandemic?
No. Work at height continues to be a challenge in the construction sector, and continues to be probably the most common reason for serious or fatal accidents in the sector. So you're talking about working on roofs, working on scaffold, there and ladders, etc. They are the key areas. And I suppose I'd also like to mention that one of the concerns generally is that on smaller sites, that maybe where supervision is not as tight as it should be, these are areas that we know for a fact that more of these types of accidents are a feature. So work at heights is an issue right across the industry. Indeed, I know you mentioned at the start we're kicking off Construction Safety Month. We're actually probably in the middle of it at the moment, because we started at the beginning of October, and I've been at a number of presentations where contractors have been just reviewing the issues and precautions that they need to take and discussing that with their workers. So that the message is, don't take any risks that would put yourself in danger.
Okay. In terms of then what is in place for people who are working at a height, do they need to be, you know, do they have like a safety net? Do they have, you know, do they have to be clipped into anything, or what is the actual policy there?
Well, generally, when you're working at height, it's there's a system called collective protection that's implemented, meaning that the individuals that are working, and I'd say if you have a group of people working on a roof, then each individual doesn't have to take precautions. What the number one method of protecting people is ensuring that everybody is protected by a handrail, so therefore nobody has to do anything, and it's less likely that accidents will happen. If you provide a net or if you're providing harnesses, they are a mechanism to protect people, but they need more management because more things can go wrong in those scenarios. People mightn't clip on to the right anchor point. There might be damage on the harness, so there's more things that can go wrong in those type of scenarios.
Okay, so even when those things are there, it can go wrong there too. What do you think the biggest thing that people, employers mainly, need to be watching out for in this Construction Safety Month?
Well, what we'd like them to do is sign up as a partner to the event, and they can do that by visiting our website, CIF.ie/safety month, and there's a logo there and they can use the logo to promote. They don't have to be a member of the CIF either. We're calling on all those who are working in the sector to get involved. What we'd like them to do is run an event better and related to the work they do, highlighting the risks that people face and what arrangements are in place to protect people. So it's really just a refocus on those arrangements that are in place. People get complacent over time, and it's just to kind of refocus on what are priority issues for everybody, and that's ensuring that people work safely but go home safely.
You say complacent there, and you mentioned the word. It is true. Sometimes you may have a site maybe that everyone has worked there for, you know, a number of years or 15 years plus, and they think they know everything, or, you know, they're very used to it. And so maybe you begin to cut corners, but obviously when it comes to safety, you just can't do that.
Well, that's true, and that's what this event is all about. It's just bringing people back to rethink their situation and consider their safety and the safety of others. So, and I suppose another message we'd like, if people see something that they believe to be wrong, intervene, say something, and on the basis that we can try and put things right. So it's by all working together that people can ensure that they're safe.
Okay, and this Safety Month, you are asking to ask the question, do you know your critical risks? Have you controls in place to manage these risks? Are your colleagues aware of these risks? And are the controls in place to protect safety adequate? And if anyone wants to sign up to that, if you wouldn't mind, Dermot, just giving us that website again.
I'll just repeat the website there again, Caoimhe. It's www.cif.ie/safety month. And also, if companies are involved in social media, we're using the hashtag CIFSafety23, and if they tell us what they're doing, and many companies are online now telling us the various different events that they're running, we're watching out for those and we'll support those and repost, etc.
Okay, thank you very much. That's Dermot Carey, Director of Safety and Training at the Construction Industry Federation. Thanks, Dermot, for joining us. Now, an airline in Japan turned away a group of sumo wrestlers over concerns flights would be over their safe weight limit. Japan Airlines decided to put an extra service for the men, who it believes weigh around 120 kilos each. That's far above the average passenger weight of 70 kilos. And Japan Airlines decided to schedule an extra flight with a bigger plane from Tokyo instead. So the sumo wrestlers, maybe not too happy about that, or maybe they were. They'd probably get more leg room if they were on a different flight with not as many people. Now, if you have a spaniel dog, and I don't know, are Springer Spaniels the same as spaniel? I'm not sure, but do text in if you know. Pest control experts have claimed that spaniel dogs are the best way of sniffing out bed bugs. The insects have reportedly been taking over public transport in Paris as thousands visit the city for the World Cup, and Rentokil in the UK have launched a bed bug dog detect service which sees the canines find the creatures. It claims the animals are particularly useful when searching large buildings like hotels. So maybe you'll see lots of spaniels going around Paris in the next few days trying to sniff out those bed bugs. But yeah, not nice to think about. I wouldn't like to be over there now with all of that. But other invasive species also in the UK The first ever Chinese mitten crab trap has been installed in the UK in a bid to control the highly invasive species. This is after the crabs, named after their furry claws, are among the 100 worst invasive species, according to the Natural History Museum, with one expert saying they are eating the UK's native fauna out of house and home. Now, conservationists have constructed and installed the UK's first trap for them at Pod Hole in Lincolnshire, to catch the predators as they migrate downstream to mate. The village lies at the confluence of several drainage channels and reported as having a particularly bad problem with the crabs. And Paul Clark says he is the first UK mitten crab was recorded at Lotts Road Power Station, which used to generate electricity for the London Underground. Yeah, so lots of different species coming into, obviously UK, but Ireland as well. Different types of spiders. Like, I saw a spider there the other day, and honest to God, it was something you'd see out of, Natural History Museum, or just something you've never seen before. Huge. And obviously I had to call in for backup because I wasn't going to pick it up myself. Some of them might be dangerous. I don't know. Like, some of them are venomous now that are here, and they're surviving because it's warmer and, our climate is changing. So there you go. Lizzie texting in to say, hi, hope you enjoyed your break. I very much did. Lizzie, thank you very much. I was away in the Netherlands, and I was in Amsterdam, I was in Eindhoven, and then I went to Derry for the weekend to see my cousins. So I was all around the place, and it's very good. It's if you've never been to the Netherlands, I would definitely recommend Amsterdam. It's fabulous. You can go around on a boat, you can see all different things, you can go down to the red light district, which is a real experience if you've never been, and it's just funny to see other countries and how they do things, and what's culturally acceptable in one place is not necessarily culturally acceptable in another. Now, John in Baltinglass has texted in to say, in China and Taiwan, it's polite to burp after eating. It's a sign that you enjoyed the food. So thank you very much for that message. So I looked up a few other, strange cultural traditions or things that, are normal in other countries. And there's loads of different ones. Carrying the wife over burning coals in China. Some tribes in China follow a strange tradition where the husband carries his wife and walks over burning coals. These tribes believe that this practice would help the wife have painless labour, and some believe that walking over burning coals prevents natural disasters. Some choose to do this as the husband and wife take their first step into their new home, and some choose to do it when they know that the wife is pregnant. The husband usually does this barefoot with his wife on his back. Ouch. This tradition seems pretty painful, and definitely does. Says here as well, there's a baby jumping festival in Spain. In a yearly festival locally called El Calaco, it's probably pronounced wrong there for me, in the Spanish village of Castrillo de Murcia, men dressed as yellow devils run and jump over babies. During this festival, babies born in the previous year are placed in arranged rows of pillows spaced out down a public street. Then men dressed in bright yellow costumes and weird masks begin to run down the street, jumping over the rows of the children like Olympic hurdlers. This tradition started in the early 1600s. The villagers believe that it keeps the devil away from these children. The babies are sprinkled with rose petals after the run. I can't see that happening anytime soon here. Probably because we also wouldn't get the weather. You wouldn't be wanting to put children down onto the wet ground and pillows and rain coming down on top of you. But let me know what you think about that. 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe O'Hearty. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, we talk a lot on the show about dogs and animals that are scared around Halloween and fireworks and bangers going off. But what do you do if your children are afraid of the noises? Well, I'm joined on the line now by Joanna Fortune, child psychotherapist. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. How are you?
Very good, Joanna. And it's something that we don't really talk about much is how different sounds and, I suppose, different things can upset children at different times of year, especially around now.
Oh, absolutely. And this is such a sensory-rich time. And don't forget hurtling from this one straight into another sensory-rich time, which I know it's too soon to mention, but the C word, Christmas, will be hot on its heels. So it's a high level of stimulation for children for a prolonged period of time. And listen, many people listening going, oh, nonsense, kids love it. That's great if your child loves it. And most children will adjust, adapt and get on. But there will be children for whom that auditory stimulation or just that overwhelming sensory stimulation is too much. And we have to hold in mind that loud noises are very often the very first fear a child develops, which makes sense because, you know, we're supposed to have a startle response, aren't we? We hear a noise, we're supposed to startle to react to it. But at this time of year, it can be loud noise, loud noise, loud noise, keeping you in that heightened startle response for a sustained period of time. And that's just sensory, but also emotionally exhausting for some people.
So what do you do then? Because especially if you live in a built up area, it can be quite constant from about now until after Halloween. And there's really nothing much that you can do about it.
Exactly that. And I think it's, you know, don't dismiss or minimize it. If you have a child who's saying, I don't like the noise, I'm afraid of the noise. As parents, our instinct can be, it's just a this or it's just a that. Don't worry about it. It's nothing. There's nothing to be scared of. We do that as parents in a bid to reassure our children. But actually dismissing fears doesn't reassure them. It just tells them they're alone with the fear. So acknowledge it. Ask them to tell you the story of the fear. What's the story you tell yourself when you hear that bang? What do you imagine is happening? Oh, that's so interesting. Actually, this is what's causing it. And then you can put in something like that. I think as well, you know, once you've explained, you know, what it is and where it's coming from, some children, depending on age, depending on the child, but really like to think about the, you know, the science of it. You know, well, what causes the bang? Where does it come from? And you can appeal to that kind of curiosity so that you're demystifying it, but you're giving them that level of interest with it. Outside of that, though, Cuiva, I would say consider noise cancelling or noise minimizing headphones or earphones, because they can be very helpful at this time of year. But be aware that for some children, 1 hour, 90 minutes use of those is enough for them. Give lots of cuddles, like lots of tight, squeezy cuddles, because a cuddle, while feeling very nice, is also a deep pressure touch. It's you giving that kind of proprioceptive touch that sends a message from the skin to the brain. You're safe. I've got you. You can relax with me. So you don't have to say that, because the cuddle will do it. I also think you could look at ways to make Halloween a more internal, in-the-house family celebration, because not all children love to go trick-or-treating. They don't like the costumes. They get a bit scared. They don't enjoy the unexpected noises, as we're talking about today, but there can be other aspects. You could do, you know, get a movie. Now, this isn't the opportunity to break out the darkest horror movie, you know, and introduce your kids to it. A fun Halloween movie. Make a snack, you know, get, I think a shared snack bowl is a good idea, where everybody gets to contribute something to the snack bowl. Could be popcorn, crisps, pretzels, jellies, chocolate buttons. Just throw it all in there and it makes for a fun snack bowl idea. Sit on the sofa under a blanket, cuddling again, watching the movie, and just making that your Halloween tradition. Playing some games in the house as a family. And again, not scary games, but fun games that have Halloween associations. Making some decorations, even making masks that don't have to be really scary ones, but help children to understand that what's painted on the outside is just a cover for a real face inside, so that they can see that masks aren't real, but in a very experiential play way. I would tend to approach it in that way, but being very aware that this time of year, not just for children, I think plenty of adults listening to us right now be going, oh, I hate Halloween. You will either love it or really not love it. And that can continue right through your life. So I don't want to sit here and go, they'll outgrow it. Some people just don't like it.
Yeah, and some children, like, it's weird sometimes how their little personalities are formed at such, you know, an early age. You can have two siblings, one who loves Halloween, loves to go out, you know, loves to watch all the scary movies, and the other one that just can't bear any of it. And they've been brought up the same way in the same house.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's so much you could relate that to, because our children aren't like a little group, a herd that we're raising all as one. They are their own personalities, but that can be quite difficult if you have a child who loves the gore and the scare and all of that stuff. And that gives them the kind of sensory input that or level of stimulation that they enjoy. And you have another child who hates all of that. So you have to find your balance with it. And sometimes that's about leaning into if you're co-parenting with somebody at home, or if you've got family members where you can say, hey, could this child go trick-or-treating with you and your kids, because I've got to stay home with the other one who really doesn't like this. And trying to explain it to your other child, I want you to have the best Halloween you can have, and I also want your sibling to have the best Halloween they can have, and this is how it's going to look in our family.
Okay, so maybe if the child who likes Halloween can go with the scary trick-or-treaters and you can stay home, and that's a very good advice there. What do you do though if, you know, children are in school and maybe there's not necessarily scary things, but you know, there will be scary things happening around Halloween. Is there anything you can do to mitigate those factors? Like, you can't really stop the Halloween celebrations within school. Some schools bring in, you know, the guards to talk about the dangers of fireworks or the dangers of different things, which also might trigger a child.
Absolutely, that's true. And I remember an ad myself as a child about sparklers and the danger of them. And I can still, when I close my eyes, see that ad and the child getting their hand burned. And I still don't like those. So it is important that we know about the dangers of things like that. You know, it'd be very easy for me to sit here and say, you know, fireworks are illegal. But at the same time, we do hear and see them all the time. So we can't say, well, therefore, our children won't see them. They will. I think, you know, when we're talking about staying safe, that's the way to word it. Rather than don't get hurt, it's about stay safe, be aware. And I think we can't cancel Halloween, like you said. In fact, I think it seems to be getting a bigger deal in terms of decorations and celebrations and marking it over the years than it used to be. But I do think it's about responding to your child and their presentation. So it can be saying, look, I can't get rid of Halloween, but you and I can work together to make this feel as comfortable as possible, as safe as possible for you. So if it's feeling too much, you give me a little signal. I'll make sure that we leave whatever environment you're in. Be very aware in your community. There can be some really nice Halloween activities going on. Check with your local library, for example. There could be some lovely workshops. They will also have an array of positive, nice Halloween-themed books so that you can look at, beyond the scare, what else is there about Halloween to enjoy? Because there is more to it than just the scary stuff. And I think for children who do react very sensitively to the noises and the scares of this time of year, helping them to see and get curious about, is there another way to engage with this time of year, can be very helpful.
Okay, Joanna, are you going to dress up yourself for Halloween?
I will definitely do the headband, the earrings. I live with a child who adores this time of year. I never did, by the way, but I've learned to love it through them. So I will do mild dressing up. But yeah, there will be great Halloween fun and dress up here. But we also do loads of games. And that's why I really believe in that. You know, really just playing inside the house and carving pumpkins and painting pumpkins. You can have a lot of fun with that without actually going outside into the scary stuff.
Okay, Joanna Fortune, child psychotherapist. Thanks very much, Joanna, again.
Thanks for having me.
For joining us. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier on about different traditions, or, you know, what's culturally acceptable in one country might not be in the other. After all of my trips around the Netherlands and Amsterdam and Eindhoven last week. But Sarah in Clane has texted in to say, actually, my cousin's now ex-boyfriend was telling me in the last New Year, at New Year's, that in Spain it's traditional to put a grape in your mouth every second for the last 12 seconds before midnight. So when you shout Happy New Year, you have a mouth full of grapes. And so I looked up further and it says, apparently if you manage to eat all of the grapes in time, you are in for a year of prosperity and good luck, whether or not you believe in it. And they say here, try the experience. It's great fun. So there you go. 12 grapes in your mouth coming up to the New Year ring in. I don't know if I'd be up for that, but maybe we'll see. We've still a little bit to go before New Year's Eve. But if you're single in Denmark, it's customary for your friends and family to throw you a birthday celebration by covering you in cinnamon when you reach 25. Many believe that the tradition dates back to when spice salesmen would travel around and remain bachelors. These salesmen never settled in one place long enough to meet a suitable spouse. However, the Danish people probably kept the tradition because it provides them with a fun way to celebrate a significant birthday. Well, it's all fun and games until you reach 30, and then they exchange cinnamon with peppers. Peppers does not sound fun. So keep those messages coming in. 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, Brendan has texted in to say, great to see you're doing a slot on World Restart a Heart Day. And yes, we are. And that'll be coming up in a few minutes, Brendan. So do stay tuned for that. Going back to the funny cultural or different cultures and traditions that they have. According to the Sateri Maui tribe from the Amazon rainforest in Brazil, a boy does not become a man unless he can withstand being stung by a swarm of bullet ants. This ant has the most painful sting among all insects. Some even say the sting is just as excruciating as being shot by a bullet. The initiation ritual includes the boys sticking their hands in a glove full of bullet ants while they dance. And this tradition is not a one-time thing, it says here. The boy must go through this as many times as it takes for him not to cry during the process. And the day he can endure this torture without shedding a single tear is the day he becomes a real man. Well, I don't know how many real men there'd be around here. That seems absolutely horrific. 0833 97 97 97. Let me know what you think. Would you move to Brazil? I don't think so. Now, today is World Restart a Heart Day, and I'm joined on the line now by Bridget Sinnott, Resuscitation Manager at the Irish Heart Foundation. Good afternoon, Bridget.
Hi, Caoimhe. How are you?
Bridget, tell us about this day and what it means for people to restart a heart.
Okay, so the day, I suppose, started out a number of years ago in Europe, and it was to raise awareness about the importance of making the emergency call, starting CPR and using an AED if needed. Now, the concept started out about trying to encourage people to get in and do compressions and not be afraid. And I suppose as the years have gone by in Ireland, we have absolutely brilliant bystander CPR rates. And I suppose that's down to really the call takers who are so well trained in the National Emergency Call Centre. And then Irish people being so good about getting in to help. So we added in the piece about getting the AEDs. So I suppose we're going on check, call, compress and shock. Because the more AEDs that we get onto people's chests in the event of a cardiac emergency, and the more people who do CPR, the more lives will be saved. So the whole campaign is around encouraging people not to be afraid to do compressions, not to be afraid to use an AED, and in the event of an emergency, make that phone call as early as possible so that you can get help on the way.
Okay, Bridget, for people maybe listening in who don't know how to do CPR, would you be able to give us a little rundown of what one should do in the event of an emergency?
Yes, absolutely. So if you find somebody and they're not responding to you, you gently shake them by the shoulders. And if they're not responding, they need help. So you ring the emergency services and the number is either 112 or 999. It doesn't matter which one you use. When you get through, then you'll be asked what service you need, and it'll be the ambulance service is what you'll be looking for. And you then get through to the call taker. Now, these people are really well trained and they'll ask you a number of questions, which people can actually find quite frustrating because they'll be trying to establish what's wrong. They'll be trying to find out where you are and, you know, find the location and everything else. They'll help you because people will say, well, how will I know that you're in a cardiac arrest? And the call taker will help you identify if the person is in a cardiac arrest or not. So don't be afraid about that. They will then ask you to place the heel of your hand, one on top of the other, on the centre of the chest. and then they'll start you to do doing compressions, and they'll count out like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's when you're pressing down and releasing at that speed.
Just to put in on you there, Bridget, assuming the person has clothes on, do you leave the clothes on? Do you take the clothes? You know, do you open up their chest to make it bare? What way does that work?
So for doing the compressions, you can do a true close, no problem. But when the AED arrives, yes, then you do have to remove the clothes.
Okay, so talk us through the AED then.
So the AED. So AEDs, sometimes people have a fear of using the AED because it's a machine. But when you get the AED and you switch it on, it tells you exactly what to do. So like that, you'll expose the chest and it'll tell you, place the pads as shown in the pictures. So you'll see that there's two pads with the AED, and they're normally connected already, so you don't have to worry about that. You peel off the backing and you put the pads exactly where it shows you in the picture. After that, then, it'll tell you to stand clear, that it's analysing. So you literally, you just move back, stop doing compressions, stop touching the person, and that gives the AED then the opportunity to read and see, does the person need a shock? Because not everybody needs a shock. So then if it says shock advised, a big orange button normally is what it is, will light up and it'll tell you to deliver the shock. You press the button, the shock has gone in, and you go straight back on to doing compressions again.
Wow. Okay.
So it's so easy. This is the thing. It's so easy that you don't even need training to use an AED. Mm. The reason that we train people is because obviously you're confident. You're more confident if you've attended a class.
Absolutely.
And there's a statistic there that says if you've attended a class even once in your life, you're 10 times more likely to respond in an emergency. And that does make sense. And also the quality of the CPR that you give, if you've been practicing, obviously it can be better. But some CPR is better than no CPR.
It's life or death, really, Bridget. So, you know, and you see, it's easy to say, I think, but, you know, sometimes when people are caught up in the moment and they panic, you know, people tend to panic sometimes. Some people are great. They go into, like, you know, kind of like...
So, automatic mode.
Exactly. You see some people and they just know what to do in those situations, and then others just melt and they don't, you know. But hopefully someone can step in.
Well, that's it. Like, if you can get, if you remember, if the listeners even from this conversation today remember that if somebody does collapse, that you ring the emergency services, because then you're told what to do. If there's an AED nearby, listen to what it tells you as well. Like, everything has been really, really simplified over the years. And that's so that it'll help more and more people to respond in emergencies. Now, I don't want everybody thinking that if you start CPR and you use an AED that everybody survives. They don't. And I think we have to be realistic about this, because sometimes people, when they do CPR afterwards and the person doesn't survive, they can be quite upset about it. So we need to be mindful of that as well. But by starting compressions alone, you double the person's chances of survival. So don't ever be afraid to start. And sometimes people would say, oh, what if I start CPR and they're not in a cardiac arrest? That's fine. You are not going to do any harm.
Okay.
So always err on the side of caution is the way it is. So if they're not responding and not breathing normally, start compressions.
Okay. Some stats then today on, you know, this World Restart a Heart Day. Bystander CPR in cardiac arrests outside of hospital increased by a quarter in 10 years. That is when a member of the public steps in to provide CPR after witnessing a cardiac arrest. The HSE says almost 300 cases saw electrical defibrillation attempted before emergency services arrived. Of about 2,800 patients who suffered an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, the youngest was 1 year old and the eldest was 101. And CPR courses are provided by community groups as well as national organisations such as yourselves at the Irish Heart Foundation there, Bridget, and also then at the Irish Water Safety. Is there courses kind of all the time running, like each week, if people want to jump onto them?
So the way it works is, if you have a first responder group in your area, first responder groups are always running courses for their community. So if you're lucky enough to have a first responder group in your area, make contact with them, because, as I said, they run them regularly and they're free of charge. And, you know, and like, I can't say enough about first responder groups. They do so much for their communities and save so many lives as well. If you don't have a first responder group, then what you have is some private companies that would be running courses, and there would be a charge on those. But you can go on to our website, which is irishheart.ie, and if you click on to CPR and then you see courses for general public, you'll see a list of course providers, but you'd need to make then contact with them and, you know, and see availability and cost and everything else.
Okay.
But there are a lot of courses happening around the country. And today in particular, and all this week, because we've made it Restart a Heart Week, if you go onto a website of CFR Ireland, and you'll see then they have a section on it, it's Restart a Heart, and there's a map of Ireland, and you'll see where there's training happening around the country.
Okay.
And that's all free training, or there's demonstrations or whatever. And if people can't even get through a course, if you go onto our website, irishheart.ie again, you click on to CPR, and then you see Hard and Fast Route. We've put up three videos. One is the emergency call, so it's the exact questions that you're going to be asked on a call.
Okay.
The second video is how to do compressions, and there's a demonstration there how to do compressions. And the third video is there about about using an AED. And if you looked at those three videos, they only take a few minutes. But for those that have done courses, it would refresh their memory. And for those who have never done a course and are then suddenly faced with the situation, at least if you're then told, place your hands on the centre of the chest, you'll know what they mean. So well worth just looking even at the videos.
Okay, so just on the website, and you can get the basic training there. And of course, as Bridget said, contact your local first responders group if you are interested in doing a course. They may be running something free of charge. And if not, you can go on to the Irish Heart Foundation website, where they have a list of providers for CPR courses. That's Bridget Sinnott, Resuscitation Manager at the Irish Heart Foundation. Thanks very much, Bridget, for joining us this afternoon.